Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. February 27, 2020. Obstacles help to reach the goal. Comment: you once said that our whole world is one big obstacle. My response: yes, because it obscures the Creator. Question: who is stopping us and what is considered an obstruction? Answer: our egoism. Egoistic desires draw to us everything that surrounds us. It is hard to believe, but stones, trees, electronics, everything we create, see, and work with, and we ourselves, are just obstacles that disallow our revelation of the Creator. Question: does that mean that the Creator created this world in order to prevent me from reaching His state? Answer: no, quite the opposite. It is with the help of obstacles that I attain Him. Question: do you consider obstacles as help? Answer: of course. For example, you are an athlete. For how long do you have to work with all sorts of weights to reach some result? What is it for? Comment: I don't even ask myself about it, because if I would start asking, I would stop doing it. My response: you see. Wherever we try to achieve results and success, we must apply effort. What for? Why are there obstacles in any work, in any achievement, no matter what? Comment: but I have a goal. Let's say I want to be a champion. That is why I exercise. I lift a few tons of iron every day. And if it were not for the goal of getting respect from society and feeling good, I would not do it. My response: that is, in order to achieve something, you must make great efforts, in general, in monotonous activities, exercises, and checking yourself to see how much you are advancing. As a result, you come to a state where you reach your goal. So it is in everything. Question: but how does this manifest in our case? After all, our goal is to attain the Creator, the quality of bestowal. Answer: here the situation is somewhat different. You build up external muscles and Kabbalists build up internal muscles. They work on a different principle. In other words, I must work against my egoism, like you, but work acquiring the quality of bestowal above it. Instead of a small egoistic desire to lie down, to rest, you are attracted to sports. And I, instead of lying down to relax, am attracted to my internal work. I apply effort so that instead of an egoistic desire, an altruistic desire appears in me: concern for others, for my friend, for the Creator. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, the 25th of March 2019. Comprehend love of others through love of oneself. Question: you say that to love the other as thyself, a person first of all has to love himself. What does it mean? Answer: before you start working on loving the other, you should feel how much you love yourself, how much you think about yourself all the time, and how much you cannot give up on yourself. The most important thing for you is to please yourself, to feel good. You cannot really think about others. When you examine all this and feel how egoistic you are, then you start realizing that you do not need anything except to transfer such an attitude toward your beloved self to others. And a person who still does not feel that he loves only himself, and very strongly, cannot start working on love of the other. He does not understand what love is. We comprehend the notion of love through love of oneself when I am all about myself, all the time for myself. For example, now you sit in the most comfortable way and already think about how you will come home soon, get some rest, and lie down on the sofa. Where are my slippers, my TV set, and my dinner? That is, you seek comfort all the time. You want to entertain only your beloved self, you want to wrap him up and put him in a warm bed. One needs to feel this strongly within oneself. And one can feel it in a 10. When you aspire to think about others in the 10, you truly begin to feel how you love only yourself. You do not need friends, anyone. You cannot think about anyone but oneself. It is specifically from this realization that you can start talking about you needing to love others. You have an example of loving yourself. Now start relating to others the way you relate to yourself. It is not easy. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, the 29th of December 2019. Development of Egoism and the Method of Connection, Part 2. Babylonian Period of Development of Egoism. In ancient Babylon, people lived in harmony with each other, worked, and enjoyed life. Suddenly their egoism began to work so that they started to envy, steal from, kill, subjugate, and compete with each other. As a result of the growth of egoism, they began to hate each other so much that they did not even know what to do next. Abraham, as the spiritual teacher of the Babylonians, investigated this phenomenon and discovered what was wrong. He believed that it was necessary to transform people, to change them, because his role as a priest was to educate them. He propagated this method in his speeches and spread it among the inhabitants of Babylon. However, people disagreed with him because no one wanted to change themselves. Everyone wanted to get what they wanted. No one wanted to do what they disliked. Abraham began to feel that not only the population of Babylon was against him, but also King Nimrod himself, the Babylonian monarch. In principle, Nimrod was not a harsh king. At that time, the system of communal dormitories flourished. However, when there was an outburst of egoism in Babylon, it required a different force, a tougher hand. Nimrod became the first king in whom a desire to rule completely was awakened. Comment: in addition, in ancient Babylon, people had one language, they understood each other and were like one family. However, after the surge of egoism, a strong separation began to appear between them. My response: in principle, egoism had been developing since the time of Adam. However, back then it was on an individual level, and in Babylon it became public. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, July 1, 2019. The Uniqueness of the Force that Operates Us, Part 9. Under the Influence of Light. Question: how can I come to feel a gray state and want to break out of it even though everything seems to be smooth and good? Where do I get the need for something more? Where does the search for the purpose of my existence and especially the ability to connect everything with the Creator come from? Answer: this ability comes from exposure to the surrounding light. When you engage in Kabbalah, you invoke the upper light upon yourself, and it gradually moves you toward the Creator. This movement occurs either on the right or on the left line. The Creator sort of flirts with us here. He draws us in and out. He puts us far and near in order to bring various sensations within us in connection with Him. After all, we cannot be in one state only, either in the right or left line, but only when both are constantly compared. This is how the Creator acts. Therefore, if striving toward Him, whatever it may be, accompanies us in the group, in the classroom, while reading the original sources, etc., then we begin to see how these states change within us. This occurs constantly. As a result, we see that we have no other opportunity, and as soon as we break through to Him, we compel, force Him to reveal Himself to us. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, the 24th of November 2019. New Life Number 1192. Attaining Renewal Through Despair.
Hello, and thanks for being with us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, Nitza Mazoz.
Hello.
And today we'd like to talk about despair. We'd like to better understand this emotion that sometimes catches us in the midst of life and kind of paralyzes us. We'd like to understand how to work with it more correctly and how to use it in order to make our life better. Be with us, Nitza, please. Yeah. Despair is a feeling of loss of hope that a person's trying to achieve something or make some kind of change, and he tries until, at a certain point, he reaches despair. So, by definition, this is what despair is. Yeah. The inability to change a situation, a state, to overcome something. And there are different kinds of despair. It could be more extreme and lead to depression, or a person can simply give up. Sometimes I become despaired of something, so I put it aside. And today, we'd like to better understand, first of all, what goes on inside a person, and also, what is the source of despair? Why does nature give man such a special feeling called despair? First of all, everything that we get from nature is good and correct. If I become despaired of something, it means that next time it's better not to exert my efforts in this direction because I won't get what I want. So it's fine because next time I'll keep myself from wasting my energy and so on, and I won't go in this direction. This raises a question. As a child, I used to play soccer, and our coach, besides teaching us how to play, suddenly I noticed that he's also teaching me things that aren't directly related to soccer, but to my attitude towards life, despair, hope, believing in yourself, believing in your friends, and so on and so on, as if, what do these things have to do with soccer? Only later I understood, what do they have to do with soccer? Why did I suddenly remember this? Because you said that everything that comes from nature is good and correct, and despair shows you that maybe you're not in the right direction, and were this the case, I wouldn't survive two games in soccer. I'd fail and go home. But who are the stars? They're those that don't give up. Maybe they weren't stars at first, but the persistence is what made them stars. And those that really made it were those that didn't give up. Didn't give up meaning what? Do they experience despair? Of course they do. They simply didn't give up. This something else. That's something else. When I look at myself, I see that it's not for me. But if it's not for me, then I'm willing to let it go and take a different direction in life. To forget about it, not to regret it or nothing. Or do I overcome this point of despair that it isn't for me, and I say, no, this actually is for me, and I go for it at any cost. I'm shifting into second gear, and I tackle it with new strength. That's something else. Now the question is, what are we talking about? What I mean is that here I'm facing the purpose of life that I can't become despaired of. I can say, okay, I'm leaving the human level for the beastly level. I just want to have a good life until I die. Thank God I have this bubble that I built for myself, and I'll live in it until I die. Or I say, no, I'm not going to stay this way. I'm going to keep on going. But this is already a different level. What I want to ask is, what we understand is that despair can send you in two directions. Either it throws you back to the degree of a beast, or it elevates you to a new human level. Now, this is very important, the point of despair. Here you really have to understand, where are you simply giving up? because I didn't want to make the effort. And when is it exactly that place that I have to work on and not give up? So to conclude, you're saying that despair has a reason it comes, because it shows you where you are in relation to the forces that you have. This is your goal, these are your forces, and you see that they don't fit. So maybe by becoming despaired of my own forces, I now discover that I have someone to turn to and that I can get additional forces from there. And suddenly I discover that there is a source, a force of hope. And then I turn to the group or to the coach, like Owen says, or to the upper force. So despair in this regard is something very gladdening, because maybe without the despair, I'd bother and bother endlessly. So despair, besides showing you where you are in relation to your own forces, it also tells you, seek help. Go to someone. Stop trying to do it by yourself. Turn to someone else. Now, this is very important. So is this the correct attitude toward despair? For example, I have a child and he's having a difficult time at school. I'm sure that a person is miserable in life. Despair in the wisdom of Kabbalah is one of the most important things. That realizing myself in every moment and reaching despair is a sign that I actually have to rise to a higher degree. That becoming despaired of my own forces requires me to turn to a higher force and ask for additional strength. And by turning to him, I get additional strength. And so the despair is what brought to the renewal of my forces. It actually pushed you to the correct demand. Yeah? It says that when a child's growing up, you have to be really sensitive and cautious about the way you give him feedback for his successes and failures. It says that children, that when they were children, they were told, you're weak, you can't do it, in short, you can't, and you're not. Later on, as grown-ups, they'll easily plunge into despair that can bury them, and not only that they won't renew their forces, but they won't even believe that it's possible. Now, why does this come to mind? In your opinion, the feeling of despair that overtakes a person, is it because of external things where people tell him that you can't? Or is it something that comes from within a person, even without others telling him that he isn't or that he can't? Are these external factors that influence him incorrectly, or is it something that grows from within? How does it work? Or is it both? If a person comes to the right environment, then new forces awaken in him in relation to this environment that are projected onto him by that environment, and this is how he advances. We can't talk about a single individual here, but a person is all the time in an environment, in a society, and the measure to which he can receive forces, that it's providence that brings him to it, and so on. So accordingly, he has all of these states of despair and hope, strength and weakness, and he has to understand that this is how he's being played with, and this is how he has to respond. And also his goal is to put in as much strength as he can, that for sure eventually he reaches despair at the end of each and every stage and receives additional forces and uses them and again reaches despair. Why? In order to feel that he's dependent on the upper force all the time. Nowadays, everyone has a phone, and the battery can last for a certain period of time. And I saw that many people don't trust their battery, and that they also have a portable charger, meaning no matter where they go, they have both their phone and a portable charger. Meaning what? That if my battery runs out, and I don't have a socket, I have a portable charger. Why does this come to mind? Because you made the connection between despair and hope, between where my forces end and where they're renewed. Now, in a person's life, the distance between the two can sometimes be really far. So how to correctly make the transition between where your battery ends and the new source of energy? To begin with, I aim myself at renewal. Really in advance. I know that there's going to be the point of breaking and despair and that I'll have to overcome into a new state and that I'll get this new state. That's beautiful. You're saying that despair is there in order to help you renew yourself. Of course, this is the only reason for which it exists. And therefore we see people that create new states, culture figures, scientists, educators, people that have a creative force in their hand. Also athletes, for sure. This is how it is, that without despair, you can't reach anything. Each and every degree ends with despair, and I struggle with myself and elevate myself to a new degree. All right, to tell you, I want to teach my little boy something about despair that will help him in life. What would that be? The most correct education is by giving an example. And therefore we have to arrange an environment. I can't be an example for my little child. He won't accept it from me. He can learn it only from those that are like him. And therefore, we have to arrange such an environment around our children, our grandchildren, and grand-grandchildren, and we have to educate them in a way that they themselves will give each other an example. And this way we can teach them. So what would we teach that group of children about despair? What kind of examples should they get so later they can know how to correctly work with despair? Suppose we're despaired. Suppose as a group, Michael's group played against Oren's group, and you lost. Yeah, we lost. So we sit and talk about this, and we understand that we're weak, and we lost without crying, without nothing. Maybe we'll feel some pain, some something. We'll cry internally. But what we're trying to understand is why did we lose? And it's not simple. It takes time. Maybe at first there'll be shouting and yelling and who's to blame and this and that. But later on, we reach a state where we lost. And now what? Do we throw this away, or do we continue? In this regard, we have to see, we have to understand, we have to read, we have to take different examples from great people, from strong groups, and there are many such movies and books about this. Everyone went through big crises in order to reach success. Or they were really disappointed and they were exploited in different ways and whatnot. And then we decide that now we want to learn from losing. How can we overcome? And this is precisely how we learn not to lose. Not to lose. Precisely this way, we learn what was wrong, what to correct, how to correct ourselves, how to study our opponent. If we speak internally wise, then a person learns who his evil inclination is, his ego. And this way we prepare ourselves towards our next battle. So the entire despair, the blow that we've experienced, all in all, caused us to advance, to improve. And so we don't forget what happened, but all of our work is just to learn how to use it correctly. And now, after we have acquired the new degree, and that we're already preparing ourselves in a much more advanced way, we start saying that despair is not despair. It's actually an opportunity to advance. Owen's group that defeated us, these are actually our friends. They helped us advance. How else could we advance? But to the contrary, were they weaker, we couldn't advance. We'd only be proud over them. And this way, we actually advanced. This is amazing. You just reminded me of my childhood. We had this soccer team, and we used to play once a week. And this one time, we played against one of the neighboring villages, and they really... They smashed us. I can't even remember the numbers. Farmers. No, there were also farmers that we defeated, but this specific village, they smashed us. In general, we were a good group. Most of the time we used to win, but here, I don't even know how to describe it. 40 years later, I remember it to this day exactly. What did I learn from it? We were in shock. Why? Because the group that played against us, they were so good. How were they good? They played, we were 5 against 5. They weren't like 5. They were like a kind of tornado. It's like, you know, the wind blows and it moves things. This is how we felt. I was in shock, I remember. I didn't understand what's going on. Now, why do I remember this? Because they were the best group I ever saw. That whenever I try to understand what is teamwork, to this day, at work, different things, I remember them. They as if gave me an example of what teamwork is. Perfect coordination. No one was standing out. It was like wind. Now, you said that the group that defeated us helped us advance. Now, this is how it really was. Now, one more thing. You said that our life is like a kind of battle. We have an enemy, an opponent, that there's someone that's against us, and a person has also his inner enemy. And while you were talking, I felt that there are many parallel lines, that even if I lose to someone and I want to fall into despair, maybe actually they're there in order to teach me about my inner fight with my inner enemy. What do we have to learn from despair, actually, from failure in regard to external factors about our inner work? We learn it from crisis, mashber in Hebrew. Mashber in Hebrew means a place of new birth. It's a place where a woman crouches and gives birth. So despair is a place for a new awakening. Now, when you look at a person, previously you talked about the point of despair, and the point of despair is something really interesting. It's where a person really has to examine that he did the best that he could. It's not just that a person gives up because I understood I have to ask for help, then help me. No. But where a person really sees that he did what he can, and that's that. This is where I have to start asking. So, how does a person examine, did I do the best that I can? The environment, he can't do it on his own. A person can't criticize himself this way. No. Even when Owen remembered how it was, it's not how it was. He remembers it and is inspired or impressed by it right now. It's his current environment, not the environment from 40 years ago. This is what we need every time. To have an environment by which our despair will invert into a new leap. And this is how we have to teach our children. And this is what we have to bring them to. Without that, I wouldn't survive. Because specifically in our spiritual work, day after day, you get such a slap that, and I saw it on my teacher too, how it works on the highest degrees that he was on. So you're saying there are many degrees. So first we talked about children that play in a group, that go through a certain social process and experience the feeling of despair. When we become more developed and we want to develop more spiritually, then despair becomes more despair, and it pushes you even more forward. So first of all, don't be startled when it comes. You can't. There's always a point in which a person gets like this. Not slap, but worse. And he really loses everything that he had before and only experiences, feels the despair, the blow that pushes him out of all the methods, theories, everything. And that's it. The world came to an end. It came to an end. That's it. And still, because he prepared the right environment for himself, because he himself, he's finished. But because he prepared an environment, because he feels like a zero, the environment for sure can start working on him. And then he falls into a safe place, like when, God forbid, we're ill or something. We fall into the hands of our relatives, friends, and this is how we prevail. You just explained the process of a person's spiritual development. Spiritual development, what is that? We're developing towards what? What kind of despairs does a person experience? How does he overcome? He becomes despaired of his own forces. Yeah, but the process itself, you're saying that a person that wants to spiritually develop, he'll experience more and more despair and will learn how to work with it, how to turn it into a springboard. So what is the process of spiritual development? Spiritual development means that a person disagrees with listening to his beast, what's good or what's bad for me. What do you mean by beast? Who and what I am? I'm a beast. With all of my culture and education and science and everything, I'm a beast. And I want to start developing in me this new spark that will be connected only with the upper force, the Creator. This is what I want to develop. And according to my efforts to develop it, I'll be called a human being, an Adam in Hebrew, meaning being similar to the Creator. What is the Creator? The force of bestowal, of giving. It's the opposite of what I am. And then, if I try to maybe find this kind of a spark inside of me, this kind of inclination, then that means that in me there is really a spark from the Creator, from the force of giving. Yes, He exists in the force of giving. It's very hard to find Him. The biggest egoists can find Him more quickly, more correctly. Those that aren't that egoistic, that have an inclination to help others, to participate with others, you know, not the big individualists. It seems to them that they're already experiencing it to some extent, but they're not. In the process of developing the spark of giving in a person will experience despair, for sure. What does he become despaired of? Of falling every time into his pride, into his ego, into worrying only about himself. And this makes him despaired because he wants to see himself a bit different. How to use it as a lever, this feeling? It depends on the environment. A person himself can't. He's in this one feeling, one given. But if next to him there is something that's in contrast with him, like with weights, then this goes up, this goes down, this goes down, this goes up. So this way he can use the counterforce. And then this team, when they work together as a team, how does it take a person out of the feeling of despair? This is how they're built. They're built this way. And this is how they help each other. They talk, they understand why, what for. It's not that they're necessarily focusing on the person that's in descent now, but towards everyone. They try to feel themselves like in this flying saucer. Dr. Lightman, what's the most important thing to take from this show about despair? It's what we call kiss the stick, that despair is always a new beginning. Thank you very much. Thank you, Nitza. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.